Hi, this is Phil LeBeau from CNBC TV, and you are on the road with Dane on WGN Radio.
Grass is growing. It's time to move on. Time to get going.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, and on the line with us is CNBC's auto and airline industry guru and editor of Behind the Wheel over there at CNBC, the one and only Phil LeBeau. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dane. How are you?
I'm good. Now, Phil, you know this because this is your wheelhouse. Hey, there's a pun right there. America, I mean, we've got a love affair with the automobile, but it isn't, you know, always 57 Chevys, Corvettes, race cars. People
right.
are always interested in kind of the business of cars, the tech, you know, how modern automobiles fit into our everyday lives. And you've always had your hand on the pulse of that over at CNBC.
Yeah, and it is an interesting time because you have incredible demand for new vehicles. You still have a lot of people who are saying, I want to buy a new vehicle, but I also want to keep my monthly payment as low as possible. That's starting to put some pressure on the automakers because you're starting to see a lot of vehicles that have been leased over the last 3 or 4 years coming back into the market. So you've got a used market where prices are a little bit down, and that means people have a little bit of negotiating power when they go into a dealership and say, look, you know, why should I buy something new when I can buy something that's 3 years old and has relatively few miles and is in pretty good shape? And on top of that, you've got new technology coming into the mix, which has a lot of people saying, do I want a vehicle that has driver assist technology? We're not quite to the point where we see autonomous drive vehicles, but it's coming. So it's an interesting time for the industry.
Well, and you're seeing, you know, some of those cars that are kind of brands or people that love, like the SUVs. We remember a handful of years ago when the bottom dropped out on just the demand for those kind of cars. And so you see, you know, Detroit and automakers kind of building some of these electric cars. We got a chance to talk with at the auto show, I think it's the Chevy Cruze, right, where they had started to build in a car that you could almost see being part of just a regular American family, not just Ed Begley Jr., where they built in a lot of things that people would be okay with, and the price point was low.
Absolutely, and you have to give compliments to the automakers because of these investments that they're making that are actually coming through to the vehicle that you see in the showroom, and you can say, look, it has a lot of the bells and whistles that I want, and they have not made it too complex. That has long been a problem in the industry. The running joke has been for some automakers, if they could put a toaster in your car because they could engineer it that way, they would, even though nobody needs a toaster in their car.
Right.
So they're doing a better job of simplifying what we want. We want technology. We want connectivity in the vehicle, but we don't want to be overwhelmed, and we also want to know that it's going to work on a regular basis.
Well, you kind of bring it up, right, where it's that dovetailing of things that people would like or that would be nice from the things that people need and that they're asking for. They certainly are asking for a lot more technology in their cars. It's just the way that we kind of live these days. When it comes to, and we hear the stories of like Uber and the driverless cars, like, is that something, as a guy that's on the front line, is that in our near future where we're going to have cars that are going to drive themselves?
It depends on your definition of the word near. Look, almost every automaker says that by 2020 or 2021, they expect to have a vehicle, an autonomous drive vehicle, that they're going to sell to the mass market. The key here is how much autonomy will the vehicle have. You will still have the requirement of drivers being in control of the vehicle or have the ability to take control of the vehicle at almost all times. There will be times, and you already see it right now with certain models out there. Take the Tesla Model S. You can go with your hands off the steering wheel for very short periods of time, but they don't want you to take your hands off the wheel, read a book, take a nap, do whatever you want to do,
right,
and just assume the vehicle is going to steer its way down the highway. And that's why the current technology doesn't allow that. But we're moving over time where you will have less and less need to take control of the steering wheel. Most believe that by 2025, you will likely see some form of fully autonomous vehicles out on the roads. Most likely, you'll see those in closed campus environments. What are we talking about? We're talking about, let's say, a retirement community where you will see some of these autonomous drive vehicles where they don't have to interact out on the roads and highways with the public as much as just drive around in that area. But over time, you will see it come into the market. And This is a messy transition that we're in because you've got 270 million vehicles out there, a lot of them very old that have no autonomous drive technology at all. And ultimately, you want these vehicles talking to each other. That's really what makes them work to their ultimate efficiency.
Well, you think about this, too, and you've kind of described sort of a, like an individual Disney monorail system that can be to expand into whatever, whether it's a retirement community or maybe a town, maybe you know an entire individual city that might have it. And you mentioned talking together. When people look at all those you know classic cars and things that people collect that will never have or just weren't built with that kind of technology, do you see maybe an aftermarket way for you to build in some of the technology, even if it's just the communication between vehicles?
There's already some of that being developed and being sold and being implemented. And now you get down to the question of how much do you want to spend to turn your 2010 Honda Civic into a vehicle that will communicate with stoplights, with other vehicles, will give you a lot of autonomy. Is it $800? Is it $1,000? I mean, there is a point where people will say, look, I think this is great stuff, but I don't think it's worth it for me to put that on a 2010 Honda Civic.
Right.
So that's part of the messy transition that will need to be sorted out over the next 10 to 15 years.
On the communication side, you talk about cars communicating with others, and then you've got kind of you know us on the broadcasting side. And so as cars now have, a lot of them have Wi-Fi built into them and a lot of the Bluetooth and deal with your phones and the podcasting thing, do you see a time where you know the regular terrestrial radio situation will be either, certainly it'll be complemented, but I mean maybe replaced by just having kind of online sound as far as the communication for the stations?
No, because I think that there is always going to be, look, for the foreseeable future, there's going to be, most vehicles will have terrestrial radio in them, and that is ultimately how a lot of people want their information when they're driving around. Look, it's the old adage, and I did radio years and years and years ago, local is what it's all about. As wonderful as XM is, and I have XM, and there are a lot of things I love about XM. Who do I turn to when I want to get a traffic report? Well, I flip on WGN. You just can't get that with XM or some of these other companies. Now, you can get certain things like your local traffic report, but let's be honest. It's no different than local TV. When you want that information that is customized to you and your driving situation as much as possible, that's where you're going to turn. And I don't think that we're going to see that replaced anytime soon.
Well, and you think about the stuff that you do on demand, covering the news, you know, as it happens over at CNBC. I appreciate that. And it's nice to hear that we won't necessarily be replaced soon. But when you want to unplug and you want to get out on the road for those road trips, people want to know. So Phil, you cover all these things. You know everything about every vehicle that's there and even on the RV side. So for you personally, we do this with the show every week. As a kid, did you guys and the whole family do any of the road trips? Have you done them as an adult where you get in there, go to the Grand Canyon or Yellowstone? Have you done the family road trip?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In southwestern Michigan, as it was for a lot of people growing up here in the Chicago area, southwestern Michigan was the place that we went every summer. There's a small town over there, a couple of them right next to each other, Coloma and Water Valley, by Pawpaw Lake. We went every single summer, and we still go up there occasionally. I think that is never going to go away, and that's the appeal of places, whether it's in the western side of Michigan or in Wisconsin. I think you will always have people who will road trip. I still do that with our kids, although they're considerably older now, so those road trips are far different than when they were 4 and 7 years old. And I think that there will always be that love of the family vacation where everybody gets in the car and they go somewhere.
And you know, now Philibo, you can request, you know, the latest maybe Ferrari or Lamborghini in order to test, right, for journalistic reasons. But in the past, you know, growing up, and people share this as well, what was your first car? Was it something really cool and impressive or tech wise, or was it just like a regular vehicle?
Oh, no. My first vehicle that I owned, I mean, well growing up, I drove around in the parents' car, you know, once you got the license, and it was a big old Buick. But the first car that I ever bought, I did not buy until I was in college down at the University of Missouri, and it was a rusted out. And when I say rusted out, it didn't have a passenger window. I eventually had to get that replaced. Honda Accord that I bought from a friend in Springfield, Missouri, for $500 and a case of Budweiser. And, you know, when you're a junior in college, you don't have much money, you're paying your way through college, you go ahead and that's a good deal. And look, the old adage is very true. You can drive a Honda or a Toyota, a lot of those cars, you can drive them forever because they run like a top forever. And that certainly was the case with that first one that I bought. I mean, we're going back to the mid-'80s when I bought that vehicle, and it served me well. I was very happy with it.
Right, you know, Phil, that at certain periods in our life, the case of Budweiser is the coin of the realm, right? So this was definitely a fair trade there. So for people who want to get information, want to watch it, as so many people do all around the country on CNBC, can you give us some information, maybe social media so they can follow it? Because I know you have important info on the tweets as well.
Well, I mean, obviously, CNBC.com is the place to go if you want to read the content online. We're on almost every single day on CNBC TV doing the latest news, whether it's Ford and its guidance for the first quarter, which is a story I'm working on today, or, you know, what's developing with Tesla as it's building out its portfolio of vehicles. I will always be on CNBC TV. And then, you know, Behind the Wheel is the blog on CNBC.com. And obviously, any journalist today, you can't go 5 feet without tweeting or putting something on Facebook. It's the world where you are always on.
Well, Phil, we appreciate you being able to take a little bit of time out and go behind the scenes into some of those things and the thought process, and encourage people to check you out in all those different forms on CNBC. And thanks for being on WGN today.
Glad to do it, Dane.